Okay, well, welcome again to the Zohr Network webinar. Today we are talking about the predictable stages of growth for franchise companies. Before I turn it over to our speaker today, if this is your first time joining us for a Zohr Network webinar, let me tell you just a little bit about who we are. Zohr Network is part of Franet, an international franchise consulting firm, and Franet has more than 28 years in the industry matching franchise concepts to quality franchisee candidates. As part of Franet, Zohr Network was created to provide franchisors with additional resources and best practices to grow their businesses, which brings me to our speaker today. So I'd like to introduce you to Jim Canfield. He is the Chief Executive Officer for Renaissance Executive Forums, one of the world's leading membership organizations for business CEOs and owners. So with that, Jim, I will hand it over to you.
Great. Thanks, Alex. Let's see if I can get my screen sharing, if you'll just verify for me that that happens. All looking good on your side, Alex?
It looks good.
Great. Well, thanks, everyone, and welcome. I'm glad to be with you today. Just by way of a little bit of background, I've been working in, with, around, and as an entrepreneur for all of my life, and started two companies fairly early, a trucking company in my 20s that we grew up to about a $7 million company, 150 trucks, and we sold that one. Went into the investment business, and we built one of the largest investment firms serving the credit union industry off Wall Street and sold that one. And I had that opportunity in the middle of my life to figure out what I wanted to do next. And the decision that I made was to work with small business CEOs. And I've been doing that for 22 years. I've worked with CEOs individually. I have about 10,000 hours coaching small business CEOs directly. In addition, I put them in peer groups, and now I help people around the world put them into a peer group. A peer group is typically a dozen non-competitive CEOs who meet on a regular, ongoing basis, usually monthly, to work on the issues they're facing in their businesses. So I'll tell a little bit more about that as we move along. What we'll talk about today is this predictable formula of how companies grow. One of the things when you're in the middle of a fast-growing company, it can feel really chaotic and you really don't know where to go next. And the reality is there's a very predictable pattern that I'll show you today on how companies grow. But first, let's start with some facts. And you can see the numbers in front of you, 15 million, 1 million, 300,000, 21,000, 2,700, 85, and 5. Here's what those, if those are the answers, here are the questions. How many businesses are there in the U.S.? Turns out there are 15 million. 1 million. Of those 15 million businesses, only 1 million ever make it above 1 million in revenue and 10 employees. So let that sink in for a second. The vast majority of small businesses are really small. A lot of our franchisees may fit this category with a few employees and a handful of revenue dollars coming in. Let's look at companies that get a little bigger. 300,000 companies make it above 5 million in revenue. Now, it's still a relatively small company by most of our measures, but still growing, but only about 300,000 make it to that level. Now we get to 21,000. This is the number of companies in the U.S. that make it above 100 million in revenue. And to me, that's always a much smaller number than I would have expected. Next number, 2,700. I want you to think about many of your franchisees. This could be true for many of you who started your own business. The two things that I hear from business owners, I started this business to have more flexibility in the way I live my life and the way I handled my work, and I wanted to have more time with my friends and my family. And what we find is this 2,700, that's actually the number of hours that most business hours report they work. This is data that was collected by SageWorks, who found that the average owner says that he works 52 or more hours a week. That's more than some of their employees work. And then the number 85. 85% of owners, according to a Wells Fargo Gallup survey, report that they are required to be in the business on a day-to-day basis just so the basic functions and value proposition of that business gets delivered. Now, all of that would make a lot of sense and maybe even be justifiable if there was a huge return that was coming out of those businesses. But what we're finding is the average company overall data is growing at about 5% a year. So our question is, how do we beat that average? How do we learn something that will help us be a little smarter, a little faster, and grow a little quicker? So this all started in an interview. I was in an interview for a major publication, and the interviewer asked me how long I've been working with CEOs and how many hours, and I mentioned, you know, at the time about 10,000 hours. And she said, wow, you must have heard hundreds, if not thousands, of issues that these company owners are facing. And I was nodding my head and starting to agree with her when I thought about it, and I said, you know, that's really not true. I really see five central issues that show up over and over. And if the organization is able to negotiate those five issues, those five constraints, I call them gates, if they're able to make it through those five gates, then they continue to grow. But if they don't, then their growth is thwarted and they end up staying where they are. It's why those companies stayed at $1 million and $5 million in revenue. Let's start by taking a look at the four stages that companies actually move through as they grow. If you're a franchisor, this is the stages that your company will move through, and it also applies to your franchisees. Franchisees follow the same predictable pattern. Those four categories are startup, build up, build out, and enterprise. Startup, as defined, this is getting off the ground, adding customers, and starting the business. Build up is continuing to add customers and revenue to achieve critical mass. And what I mean by that is it becomes a sustainable business. It's not going to go out of business if it loses a customer or two. It's not dependent on a small number of customers only. It's begun to actually have a sustainable base. Build out is typically where the organization really starts to focus on building profitability, growing selective revenue. I'll talk a little bit more about that, and creating a management team. An enterprise is building an organization that maximizes total value of the organization. And a very key decision has to be made at this stage. As the owner, do I invest in the business? Do I divest the business? Or do I harvest the business? And I'll talk more about each of those decisions as we move through through our program. I mentioned those five gates. So at each one of these four stages, a set of gates appear, and we either make it through that gate and continue to grow, or we stop and remain stationary at that last point in the cycle. The first of the five gates is people. Far and away, the biggest issue that we see in working with CEOs all around the world is people, and we'll talk about some of the impacts of people on the organization and the issues that come up. Second is process, how we do what we do. Third is our performance. Do we measure it? And if we do, are we hitting attainable, clear goals to improve it? Personal leadership. What's happening at the top of the organization? And is the leadership in sync with and meshing with the growth dynamics of the organization? And last, planning. Do we have the right plan in place at each stage to be able to fully incorporate that stage and move to the next? So startup, build up, build out, and enterprise. I'm going to use the analogy of the space program to explain these stages. So I'm always fascinated when I see a liftoff or one of the pictures from a liftoff. I mean, the sheer scope and scale of what happens when this rocket takes off. You can see by this photo there's three or four fuel tubes that are all attached to the rocket and are firing all at one time. It's been said that you can feel these rockets take off for dozens of miles from the point of the liftoff and see it well into the air from miles and miles away. Now, what's interesting about that is the launch is really just to get the shuttle off the ground and into orbit. So what's interesting to think is, how far is that? How far does it actually have to go? The reality is 150 miles. Orbit occurs at 150 miles. The first rockets fall away at only 28 miles up. That's about 150,000 feet or maybe five times as high as your typical jet would fly on a commercial flight. The remaining fuel takes it to that last 150 miles. Here's what's critical about that. That's 150 miles of a journey that will likely last 5 to 6 million miles. And when I think about that, the way a company starts or the way a new franchise unit starts, think about how much energy has to go into just that startup phase to make sure that it doesn't fall flat. And the analogy of the shuttle is just like that. It's just to get that 150 miles. Even though we hope that unit will be around for tens and maybe dozens of years, a lot of the energy will go into that first 150 miles or relatively short amount of time in the life cycle of that particular unit. Next is build up. This is where the company begins to grow. It reaches a critical mass to make it a sustainable business. This is like a steady, sustained orbit. And one of the things that's interesting about the shuttle orbiting is it's traveling at over 17,000 miles an hour, and it makes a trip around the Earth every 90 minutes, so it sees a sunset or sunrise every 45 minutes. And every business must reach this critical mass to be able to achieve that continuity the owner's looking for. In a sustainable orbit, it can grow and weather the inevitable ups and downs that every business will face. The other thing we think about in the build-out section is we're leaving the comfort of our original plan, the original structure. This includes adding a management team, a leadership team, opening new markets, new locations, getting very focused on target customers or new types of customers or even new product lines or new sources of revenue. Build-out is also a spot where we must perform. Very precise decisions are made, and we begin to deliver on our original promise. It took dozens of trips into space before we finally completed the mission of getting that man on the moon before the end of the decade that John F. Kennedy had committed to in the early 60s. And finally, enterprise is there to maximize the business that you've built. At the enterprise stage, you've reached your maximum sustainability. You may not realize that the International Space Station has been in orbit for 15 years, and it replaced a station that had been up previously. What's interesting is that the station stays up for a period of years, and then the whole thing gets scrapped, and it gets recreated with a new space station. And one of the things that happens in our business model when we hit the enterprise stage is we need to take a rigorous look at whether we need to rebuild our business model from scratch to create a new growth curve. History is littered with companies who had a very successful model that was very lucrative and made them a lot of money, but aren't around today. Two great examples, Kodak and Blockbuster. I don't think either one of them didn't see the changes in their industry. They just didn't acknowledge it and then create internal change that protected them. Kodak had to have seen the advent of digital photography, and yet they still considered themselves in the film business for way too long. And Blockbuster didn't see itself as being in the entertainment industry. They saw themselves in the DVD or movie business. And when that model was eclipsed by Netflix, they were unable to make the changes necessary to compete. So companies at this stage have to make a very specific choice, the choice to reinvest in the company, to divest of the whole company by selling, or to harvest, in which the owners decide to take out money out of the business for a long period of time but don't really intend to reinvest for growth. So we talked about the success gates. People, do we have the right people? Are they aligned with the culture? This is absolutely critical at each stage. Process, how we do what we do. Are we critical thinkers about the way we go to market, the way we do things, and are we ongoing and regularly checking in to review our strategic competitive advantage? Performance, how well do we perform versus key metrics, and what are our key drivers? Personal leadership, how should this organization be led? And I would say the question here is, what leadership is it time for now? And then how do I lead in that environment? And then planning, What plan do we need now, and what's our plan for the future? I want to take a look at these in a little more in depth. So people, questions that every organization must ask itself at each stage of growth is, where do we need people? Do we have gaps in our current org chart? I encourage every organization to build an organizational chart based on the functions that need to be performed inside the organization, not by putting names like Joe or Bill or Sue on the chart, but functions, marketing, sales, administration, legal, IT. Even if the same name subsequently needs to be added to many spots in the chart, it allows you to see what's getting done and where we need our next key hire. Next, we have the right people. Oftentimes in the early stages of growth, we hire friends and family because we trust them. We know that they'll work hard in the business and help us build the business in a way that we would like. And they'll do a little bit of everything without too much question. And sometimes they just work cheap, and that's a nice thing to have in the early stages. But oftentimes they don't make the transition well into stages 2 and 3 and 4 as their skill set it begins to be replaced. Moving into stage 2, we need people who have very specific structural skill sets for specific parts of the business. Are the people inside the organization aligned to the culture and direction of the organization? Do we have people who believe in the direction of the organization? If you want a really good talk on this, go back and watch the video from TEDx, one of the most popular ones, Simon Sinek, The Power of Why. Do the people in the organization believe in the why of the organization? And nothing is more difficult than having an organization full of people who are highly independent. They're there for their own reasons, but they're not in alignment to the why of the organization. Are the people who got us here going to take us there? Do we need new people in the future, new skills than we have today? And frankly, what skills are we lacking to accomplish this stage and move us to the next? I want to give you a useful tool that you can take back and use today and in the future. I've used this tool literally hundreds of times and have encouraged and coached other CEOs and managers to use this tool as well. It's a coaching tool that I developed, and it's very simple. I want you to think about a person in your organization, you can do that with me now, who you depend on for key results in your organization, and write their name down. And then ask yourself this question: what three things could they do better, improve upon, and if they did, their performance wouldn't just increase incrementally, it would increase exponentially. Their contribution to the company would be much greater if they were able to perform in these three areas. Now, I can tell you when I did this exercise the first time with a group of CEOs, I asked, how many people, when you look down at your list of three, how many people, if I went back to your organization and I talked to that person whose name you wrote down and I asked them what three things they were working on as their highest priority to add more value for the company, how many of them would be able to give me a list that sounds like the three things that you just wrote down? Only half the people in the room raised their hand. So then you go to the next column, actions. What are the actions that they need to take to get that better result that you're looking for from them? Again, I pose the question. How many of them would tell me that the actions that they're prepared to take and have committed to take are pretty close to what you just wrote down? And again, I lost half the hands. Finally, in that last column, you want to write down when and how will these results be measured? And you want a specific date and a specific way to measure those results. I asked how many people had the results that they wanted to improve, the actions that needed to be taken, and a specific date on what was going to be measured and when. And only one person raised his hand. And they got that little golf applause. And the guy said, look, I wish I could take the applause, but the only reason I have this all laid out is I told them if they didn't improve by that date, they would be fired. And I thought, what a shame that is, because we have this opportunity to have this conversation with our key people all the time, and this shouldn't just be a tool that we pull out when we're trying to review performance that's substandard. This is a tool that can be used with your top performers, your medium performers, and those that need improvement. It's a great tool, and it provides a way for people to understand where they stand at all times and for you to be in alignment with them about what they're working on to improve. The next of the success gates is process, how we do what we do. What's our strategic competitive advantage? Now, you probably think that there are hundreds of processes that drive your organization, and there are, but I'm going to break it down really simply and tell you there are really three. If you want to deliver process-driven growth, you want to focus on one or all of these three. The first is your sales revenue process. How do we drive revenue in this organization, and how effective are we at doing so? And the two things we want to constantly measure are delivering consistent top-line revenue, and second, delivering predictable bottom-line profitability. I believe every organization annually should take a look at all three of these, but particularly the sales process, review it from the first contact with a lead or potential customer to the final sale and transaction, and then even post-sale, to look for follow-up business and referrals, and that every organization should really vet this whole process to look for opportunities for improvement. The people process. How do we go about bringing people in and keeping them? So how do we attract and hire great candidates? What's our process? What assessment tools do we use? What's our interview process? What do we do to select the candidate? By the way, you could apply this to your franchisees. How do we do that when we select a great franchisee for our business? The second part of this is how do we develop and retain these key people, these key performers over time? So what programs do we have in place for development? Gallup shows that the number one reason that people stay with the company that they have chosen is that they feel like they're growing in their position, that they're growing as a manager and as an executive, as a leader inside the organization. And where are we giving those opportunities for people to grow and develop? And you know, is our compensation package and program in place as well? On the operations side, we need to develop dependable, repeatable customer processes. How do we service those people who come in to see us, who are our bread and butter? And how do we develop efficient and effective internal processes? Now, one of the things I'd like to share is a philosophy that a couple of friends of mine who founded the Barefoot Winery, my guess is that somebody's probably sampled their product in the past as a customer. And what they have a very unique way of looking at these process-driven activities. When they took over that winery, they didn't have a lot of experience in the wine business or, frankly, even running a business. And what they did is they said, you know, we're going to divide everything we do in this company into only two parts. One is sales, and that's everything that has to do with directly or indirectly driving revenue and sales. And the second is sales support. And so the people process, the operations process, and frankly anything else the organization did fell into a sales support role, because in one way or another, everything else in the organization is supporting the growth in revenue and the profitability of the company. And I thought that was a really interesting and unique way for Bonnie and Michael to get a handle on a very complex business in a fast-moving industry by taking that basic, simple look at it. The next of our success gates is performance. How do we perform versus key metrics? And in fact, what are our key metric drivers? Every organization should have a handful, no more than 2 to 5 key metrics that you are focused on and that you're very clear daily, weekly, monthly, quarterly, how you stand against your best case or your benchmark levels. And the analogy I like to give, this is a beautiful little scene. You're on a tropical island, and what I want you to think about is this. You get a permanent vacation in a tropical paradise of your choosing. The only qualification for being able to stay on that island and enjoy it is you have to be able to tell me how your business is doing. And by the way, you have a cell phone, but it takes all month for that battery to charge because of the very low power outage on this wattage on this island. So you get one call, and it's 15 minutes long once a month to know how your business is doing. Now, I've learned from experience, if I call in and I say, well, how's it going? I'll get a lot of information. I'll probably get a lot of information pretty fast. I'll get some stories about what's happened recently, but it won't necessarily tell me the fundamental question is of question, answer the questions of how are we doing relative to the metrics that we hope to deliver. So if I have a handful of key metrics, I can in 15 minutes actually know how we're doing. Are top line sales on track or profitability on track? Are the key operational aspects of the business that we've deemed to be most important, are we on track or off track for those? So I'd encourage you to create these key metrics for your business. The next of our success gates is personal leadership. And this comes down to how the organization should be led and how do I lead. What I've learned is that there are very specific leadership styles that occur at each of the stages of growth. So during the startup, I'd like to describe the style needed for this leader as a champion. They're a champion of the business. They're a champion of the people. They have to represent the face of the business to a lot of people who haven't seen it before. It's just launching. So brand new customers, maybe new bankers who are beginning to understand whether they feel comfortable lending to this organization, suppliers, vendors, even employees, getting them to believe in this organization as an entity is important, and so they're the overall champion. As we move into build up, that second phase of building a sustainable business, they become the leader of the organization. In other words, you will at this stage have a series of followers, and it's important to model what you want others to do. It's important to be very specific about what outcomes we're trying to achieve and the vision of the organization and where it's headed. It can't just be something that you have in your head anymore as the leader. It's got to be articulated over and over and over to make sure that everybody's clear on why we're here, what we're trying to accomplish, and how we're going to achieve it. In stage three, a very interesting transition occurs. Now, you remember one of the characteristics of stage three build-out is that you're going to build a management team who's responsible for running the basic business. So all of a sudden, this leader who's been a champion and a leader out in front, the face of the business, directing, highly directive of the efforts and the direction for the organization, all of a sudden needs to shift from a directive style to a very collaborative style, a delegating style, handing over much or if not all of the operational parts of the business to others that he can trust and who will now articulate the direction and the vision and the mission of the organization to others as well as the how-tos. And so the role of the leader turns from a leader to a leader of other leaders. And the final step in the enterprise, now the owner, the CEO, the president, has really taken a more hands-off approach to the business and is there to coach, mentor the leaders inside the organization rather than tell them what to do. At this stage, the leaders inside the organization should have learned what to do, and now they just need situational guidance as to what to do in specific situations. One of the reasons that we saw that big fall off or that big cliff of companies who didn't make it above 1 to 5 million is because most leaders struggle with making this transition between the build-up stage and the build-out stage. Moving from a directive leader to a highly collaborative leader can be very challenging without the right coaching, without the right support groups behind them to make that transition. Last, planning. What plan do we need now, and what's our plan for the future? So I'm going to walk you through the different plans that are needed at each stage. In the first stage, that launch stage, you can see there the graphic of the shuttle to remind you of the power needed. We need a startup business plan. Our goal is to get launched. We need to identify strategic objectives about what the company is trying to accomplish, set about the biographies and the backgrounds of the key players involved, really understand the customer demographic, psychographic, geographical region of the potential customers, know about our competition, who else would our customer choose if they didn't choose us, develop a penetration strategy to reach our customers, and finally set up forecasts. Remember that the role of the leader at that stage is of champion, and this is what the champion communicates over and over and over, whether it's to new employees, whether it's to a banker, or whether it's to a vendor. They have to understand what they're trying to accomplish in these early stages. Now in stage two, we're in build-up stage. Remember, that's to add customers and revenue to get to a sustainable business level. We need a marketing plan. This is where we get very focused. I have to admit that in the startup stage, marketing is usually, let's get somebody to buy from us, anybody to buy from us. In fact, everybody we want to buy from us. But in the second stage, we start to get really focused. Who is it we're after? Who's our best customer, really? Who do we want more of as a customer? Who else is after them, and how do we compete against that? How do we differentiate ourselves? How do we create ourselves as unique? What's our messaging and positioning? What is our message to these people that we know we've now chosen to target? The sales and marketing methods, how do we reach them? And finally, what will we do to reach them? Who owns that and will be responsible? And then how do we measure it? Now we move to stage three, and we're at the build-out. This is where we're building a management team. This is where we absolutely need a full-on strategic plan. We need to articulate the vision from this point forward, really emphasize our mission, what the organization is and does. What are the values? What are the fundamental beliefs of this organization? What are the goals and objectives, the tasks, and how will we implement these things over time? The reason this has to be so specific at this point is it's usually no longer only the leader who is articulating these things. Now managers within the organization need to communicate them to supervisors who communicate them to line workers so that everybody is clear on the overall direction of the organization. Finally, in the enterprise, we need an exit plan or succession plan or transition plan. As I mentioned, there's a big decision here about whether to invest more in the business, to divest, that would be to sell, merge, or combine the business with others, or to harvest the business, which means I'm going to take out returns over time, knowing that the business will be less prepared to be a highly competitive threat in the future, but it will make a good return for the owner. And each one of those decisions needs to choose a different type of business leader to lead that. This is a place where the owner truly becomes an owner of the business, not just a worker in the business or for the business. And the business model should be driven by the decisions around who leads it and whether we're investing in the business, divesting it, or harvesting the business. So those are the four stages and the five gates that every business must move through. Each one is unique. Each of the five show up at each stage in a slightly different way. They create a framework for questions that we can ask ourselves as leaders at each stage of the business to be able to make sure we're on track. And if there's a point at which the organization isn't growing, we can use these as a diagnostic to say, you know, what might be holding us back? Where are we not addressing one of these key gates? I want to leave you with one thing, though. This is all the how-to. How does a company grow? And it's what I would call everything that happens in your head. It's the intellectual property behind growth. I think there's another thing that I noticed over now the last 25 years of watching businesses, and it's the heart side of things. You see, as owners, leaders, and managers, we have a responsibility to deliver hope for the people who are around us and work for us, whether it's our customers, our vendors, our suppliers, our employees, our shareholders, all the stakeholders in our business. And I go back to a story from a book that I love called Man's Search for Meaning by an author named Viktor Frankl. He was a psychologist, and he was in a prison camp in Germany in World War II, and he watched hundreds of people not make it out of that camp, die in that camp. And he wrote a book about how he survived, and it was his belief in something bigger than himself that allowed him to endure a situation that he thought he would never be able to endure. And he said, you know, we got to a point where we knew when people weren't going to make it. You see, you could see it in their eyes. They'd lost hope. And a week or so later, they'd be gone. And I think that what I want to leave you is, yes, the head is important, making sure that we understand and know all the information I gave you about how a company grows is important. But also, we have to nurture the hearts of the people who work with, for us, and even our customers that we serve. Because people will ultimately stay based on whether they hope things will be better and hope that they'll be able to make a difference. Thanks very much. I'd be glad to take any questions if you have them.
In this area.